Welcome to episode 128 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live June 2nd, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In today's episode, Scott and I, Ben, hide indoor from the 100-plus Fahrenheit degree heat and talk through an overview of a recent session that I gave around automation in Office 365, leveraging SharePoint, Flow, or Logic apps in Azure Automation. There we are. I am now recording all the things that go on in my office.
Excellent.
Not always.
As it should be.
As long as I don't step sideways and step on the Legos on the floor.
Yeah, or as long as the kids don't wake up.
Yes, they are two of the one half. No, three quarters. Three quarters of the crew is down for a nap.
No matter how old your kids are, you should put them all down for naps. My kids are 10 and 12 now. And sometimes when they get cranky, we'll absolutely tell them to go to their room and read a book, and then they fall asleep and they wake up and they're magically better. And even as an adult, it is highly recommended to take a nap.
Yes, I have read studies. I have not read studies. I have heard of people who have read studies who say naps are very good for you. Not the naps where you like pass out into a deep sleep, but like the type of naps, especially when you're working during the day around lunchtime, where you get drowsy like at 2, the type of nap where you like sit in your office chair and hold keys in your hand and you fall asleep just enough that you drop the keys and they wake you up. So you don't like wake up groggy, but you wake up feeling refreshed.
Yes, that's where to go. You know, I mean, Kramer was doing this years and years and years ago on Seinfeld, right? The power nap.
The power nap, yes.
Yeah.
There was some legitimacy. So, sitcoms actually are medically accurate every once in a while.
Yes. Should adults take naps? Yes. Should children take naps? Yes. Should adults take more naps than children? Yes.
At what point in time do you become an adult that needs more naps than your children? Is that an adult that has children?
Yes. Nailed it.
Perfect.
So what do you want to talk about today?
Swimming. Florida. No, we don't need to talk about swimming. I already went swimming today. It's 100 degrees out. I was grilling burgers. I jumped in the pool.
I almost went swimming. I broke out the pressure washer and cleaned my house and my driveway. So I got nice and muddy and wet, if that counts.
And now you could eat off your driveway or cook burgers on your driveway. It's so hot out.
I could probably cook them. I don't know if I would eat off of it, but cooking them, absolutely. Just put a grate down and let it go.
Yes. All you people that think Florida's wonderful, not this time of the year.
It's a little muggy out there.
Yes. Hot, humid. It's like living in a fire. Anyways, we don't need to talk about that today. We thought we would talk about a session I did. I've done the session a couple times. I did it once back in December at the Live 360 conference. I did it again yesterday at the IT Pro Camp here in Jacksonville. But we thought it would be a fun topic to kind of talk about on the podcast. And it's a mashup. I'm going to use a cliche type IT term. I think that became popular with like some of the business intelligence stuff. Anyways, a mashup, that's not even just IT, but of technologies and how you can use it to kind of automate some things in Office 365.
Yeah, there's a couple things that happen out there. You know, full disclosure, I sat in the session yesterday and kind of listened in, and I'm always interested in how the audience reacts to things like that. So your session was automating Office 365 with Flow, PowerShell, and Azure, which brings together a bunch of interesting contexts or technologies kind of on the back end that drive just forward-facing functionality that we might use day-to-day within our applications. And then it wasn't so much even about the application stack. Like, yeah, there's these technologies that can help us, but then maybe even a little bit around how once you implement one of these things, like Flow versus maybe Logic apps, which one should use and how do you govern it and where does all of that come together? So I thought it'd be fun to chat through it.
Yeah, and it even brought up some stuff too around Power Apps, because I did leverage some Power Apps in kind of some of these solutions I've put together, and there were some questions around Power Apps, and I know at least one guy in the room, we like made his day. I don't know if you noticed him. He was like in the opposite front corner from you. I thought at one point in time he was about to like get up and start dancing. Like he had his hands up in the air and he was getting really excited and geeked out about this. So it was fun. I was glad there was at least one person that I could help.
That's the thing with sessions, right? No matter what, as long as you get one thing out of that session, like if you're an attendee and you know, you're sitting through whatever length of time it is, could be 20 minutes, could be 50 minutes, could be one of those longer 75 minute ones, could be an all day workshop, whatever it is, get one takeaway from it. Hopefully you get more than one, but if you get at least that one thing, it makes it totally worthwhile to take it back to your job or the real world or whatever it happens to be.
Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info. So unfortunately, in this podcast, we can't fit the whole session and I'm missing a lot of the visuals I did, but we can kind of start at the beginning of that session and walk through kind of logically how that session progressed and hit on the kind of the key points of that session at a high level. And if you do want to see the whole session, I believe there's a recording out on YouTube from when I did it at the Live 360 conference that we can link to, and you can go watch that. But it kind of started out the session, like you said, it was tying in, it's how you tie in Flow, Azure Automation, PowerShell, and tying in some SharePoint, and then maybe some Power Apps if you want to customize the form. But I started it out with just kind of an introduction to Flow, and looking at Flow, like you said, and then Logic Apps, and how those compare. Because there's some, I don't know if I would call them fundamental flaws as much as fundamental differences between the two, and especially how you might think about them when it comes to the management and governance of those two technologies within your organization. So Flow can be used for some of those central automation processes you want to run within your company. And the nice thing about Flow, if you were a SharePoint person, if you used to use SharePoint Designer, and it was really hard to do anything outside of SharePoint, or if you used something like a Zapier, and if this, then that, you found that, well, you can do some things in Office 365. Those primarily connect to external data sources. You can do things with Twitter, with smart things, with some of those. Flow kind of sits in the middle. So you're not going to get as many connectors to external services as some of those other ones. However, you do have several hundred connectors to Twitter, to even things like Gmail and Google Drive and Google Docs, Facebook. I think Salesforce might be in there. So there's a bunch of third-party services, but then it also ties into a lot more of the internal Office 365 stuff, whether it's getting user properties from Azure AD or looking at shared mailboxes in Exchange or SharePoint lists and libraries and files. Because it's that Office 365 product, they integrate it extensively with the Office 365 stack, but also allow you to tie into a bunch of other third-party things. So that's Flow at a high level. But some of the flaws with Flow come in that users, by default, have rights to go out and create all these flows. They can do whatever they want to. They can go create them, create these automations, these workflows. It's great. It empowers your users to go do that. However, they are the sole owner of these. So if their account goes away, if they leave your company, you disable their licenses, disable their account, these flows just kind of disappear. They're going to stop running. They were only owned by one person. So they're just kind of, they essentially break because that user account's broken.
Well, you're talking about when a user goes away and a license is reclaimed.
Yep. Yeah. So if you want these flows to really become central to your business, you need to think about, okay, what am I going to do? Because I don't want these owned by a user. You can go in and add another user or add a service account is what I would actually recommend. Add like your Office 365 admin, that global admin account we talked about in some previous sessions, and make that an owner. And this automatically converts a flow into a team flow where now multiple people can own it, can manage it, can make updates to it, that type of stuff. So that is one thing to think about when it comes to that aspect of managing flows. And the other thing is those connectors. So all these services you also have to connect to. If you're going to go look at a SharePoint list, a SharePoint library, an Exchange mailbox, some account has to connect to it. And that account obviously has to have permission to that service it's connecting to. Again, by default, it's going to try to use the account of the person creating the flow. Maybe this account doesn't have rights. Or again, if this user leaves, even though it's a team flow, it may be using a user account to connect to these services. You probably want to think about leveraging a service account and connecting to these services as some type of service account so that it's not tied directly to an individual. From that governance level of flow, those are kind of two things you really want to think about when it comes to flow and managing those flows that your users may create.
So just to break that down and summarize it, because you kind of had two different things going on there. With the team flows and that recommendation to say, let's go ahead and add another user, I think there's a couple different things there. And you talked about it in the session when you did it yesterday, was there's no such thing as create a team flow. Like, you don't go in and say, hey, new flow or new team flow. You just create a regular flow and then you add another person as an owner specifically to that flow. And then all of a sudden it becomes a team flow, right?
It's got
that distinction on the back end where it has multiple owners. And then that thing where you mentioned, hey, let's bring in another principal or another entity, right? Whether it's something like that global admin account or just another user account that's specifically created to govern flows so that you can have that team flow construct. There is a requirement there that that account that you bring in also has access to a paid flow plan. So they've either got to come through whatever they're, say you're doing like E3 or E5 licensing with the entitlement, or you've got to go out and buy them a flow, what are they, P1 or P2, whatever those different plans are.
Yeah, plan. I don't know when they use like P1 or when they use plan one, but those, like you said, those unique flow licenses, because you can, that was another thing we talked about, you can license flow by itself outside of Office 365.
But I think that's an important distinction, right? It's not just bring in a user or a service account or an admin or a SharePoint admin or something like that. It's bring in an account that has a license to it so that you have the ability to gate that and bring it through. And realistically, you don't have a great way, I think, to kind of force that organizationally, right? That's something you need to talk to users about and make sure they understand the impacts. And what if somebody creates a personal flow, but they forget to add that account in there? What does all that look like? Those are all things that you need to potentially think about addressing as part of your governance kind of story. That was the first part. And then that second part was you were talking specifically about connectors to those external services within a flow, which I think is another interesting one because there's no concept of maybe organizational templates for flows. So everybody's either going out and starting from a public template in the gallery, or they're just starting with a blank flow and kind of clicking next, 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 or they're in that graphical interface, right? That drag and drop designer to spin things up. So there's a bunch of intentionality there too. Like, how is an end user who's creating this specific business process, like say we're in HR and we're processing yearly employee reviews or something like that, right? It's sensitive information. It has other things like, how do we create that service account? How do we communicate credentials for that account to that user who's the one who's actually creating it? Like, is it the end user? Is it somebody in your business process improvement group that actually goes out and works with the business and creates those? There's all sorts of just little gotchas along the way that you need to think about with a product like that.
It's definitely interesting when it comes to that management, because that was, and kind of what you had hinted at there or talked about there, is that was one of those questions that came up is, well, can I have kind of a templated set standard for flows within my organization? So every flow that's connected uses like shared service accounts or has these five users set as owners by default. And right now, to the best of my knowledge and anything I've ever seen about it, there really isn't any way to do that. This is my flow. I am creating my flow. If I feel like making it a team flow, I can grant other users to it. But there's nothing to force that on users as they create flows within your tenant.
Yeah, that'd be like too nice to have those kinds of things.
I know, right?
I think one of the things was, you know, when you started a couple minutes ago and you said maybe power apps, or not power apps, maybe something like Flow versus Logic apps, I think that's where that story starts to come together a little bit more, where maybe you say some processes are 100% gated by a Logic app where they do have that governance and that constraint and that control on top of it.
That's really where this comes in. And just now you start talking about Logic apps, where Flow was that user, kind of that user level workflow process. And then in Azure, you have Logic apps, which I believe, at least to a certain extent, some people have mentioned to me that it's not 100% accurate that Flow is built entirely on Logic apps, but at least at some fundamental level, there is a common denominator there where it's the same type of user interface, it's the same underlying technology, but it sits in Azure. So now it's owned by a subscription. You can leverage all of the RBAC controls, the policies, all of that rich Azure functionality that really is designed for more of that management at an organizational level to make sure that those Logic apps stay running, that you have a lot of those policies, those connectors in place. I see Logic apps as an organizational, managing stuff like flows, those workflows from that organizational level, more so than the flows where it's kind of more at that personal level, because you do have a lot more of that richer governance while still maintaining almost all of the functionality that you have in flows. I will say there's actually fewer connectors in Logic apps, or it's different connectors in Logic apps than Flow, because Flow is geared for that end user and not quite as developer-y as Logic apps. Some of Logic apps is relying on the person creating the Logic app to leverage some of their IT knowledge to create connectors and connect to different services, where Flow, they kind of want to make it all plug and play for more of that end user power business user type person.
There's a couple of things there. So just to clarify, it is the same backend. So when you create a Flow, you're just having a managed Logic app spun up for you inside of, kind of think of it as a Microsoft managed Azure tenant. It's still a Logic app and it's still doing all those things, but it certainly has, like you said, a different gated set of connectors along the way. And some of that comes back to the licensing model. So think Logic apps as a pure consumption service. So where you're going to go ahead and maybe spin up some compute and then consume against that unit of compute. And then something like Flow being a per user license consumption model, where I'm a paid user license and I can come in and go ahead against pre-allocated bits of Microsoft's compute that they've built into the service, right? Where you start to end up in that 2,000 executions per month and all those kinds of things, with one, Logic apps being geared more towards maybe pro integrations, developers, IT pros, or like you said, true like organizationally governed processes within a business. And then Microsoft Flow being more geared towards just 100% self-service integration along the way. And that kind of helps delineate between the sets of connectors that are available, at least out of the box in each, because really it's the same backend engine. So you should be able to do anything in one or the other, but you might have to play around a little bit to get there.
Yep. As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro. And the nice thing is, so one advantage you do have with this is if your users start creating flows and all of a sudden a flow turns into maybe an organizational critical process, you do have that ability, like you said, because it's that same back end, some of the same fundamental underlying infrastructure, you can actually export a flow and import it into Logic App. So there is that conversion, that export-import that can take place to move a flow that becomes more organizationally critical from flow into those Logic Apps to get more of that governance and turn it into more of that organizational workflow, more than that user flow that was created to do a organizational wide process.
It's a consideration. I think the other one too is you have to consider maybe, do you actually have an Azure subscription and the ability to spin one of these up?
So true.
With every Office 365 customer having identity in Azure AD, you don't actually, yes, you're using an Azure service for your identity, but until you, I guess, upgrade or provision.
Yeah, I create a subscription associated with that.
With that tenancy.
Identity.
Yep.
Yeah.
Until you have an actual Azure subscription, you don't really have access to Logic Apps. You only have access to flow along the way. So the management model or maybe even the availability of those services could be a little bit different. But there's nothing to say like, hey, you can't be an Office 365 subscriber and also have PayGo Azure subscriptions or like WebDirect subscriptions that are associated with the same thing. You know, you don't need to be an enterprise subscriber or anything like that along the way to make it work.
Exactly. So once you kind of get that out of the way or you get that in place, you can actually tie those in to other Azure services. So both Logic Apps and Flow have the same capability. And this is where I start seeing some light bulbs go off when I do give this session and people start getting these thoughts of, oh, now this is really interesting how I could leverage this. And that is starting to tie Azure Automation into this. So me as an IT pro, like I've said, I do not like writing code. My idea of being a developer is writing PowerShell, and that is where it stops. So Azure Automation, I think we've done some episodes on it before. You can do a lot of stuff in Azure Automation. But what I tell people when we start going into the session is don't think of all the stuff Azure Automation can do. We're going to gloss over a lot of the capabilities that are in an Azure Automation service. And for the purpose of this discussion, we are going to look at Azure Automation as a way to run PowerShell in the cloud. So you don't have to spin up a VM. You don't have to have a server on-prem. You don't need a physical machine. You can go write PowerShell scripts to run in Azure. And it's not just PowerShell scripts, but you also have a direct integration there to the PS Gallery. So that PowerShell gallery that Microsoft owns, runs, manages, that has all of the PowerShell modules out there. That's where the SharePoint PNP modules are. That's where the SharePoint Online module is. DSC modules are out there. That is that massive module gallery that most people install at least some modules from. Right in Azure Automation, you can go in and click and add these modules into your Azure Automation, so you can leverage PNP PowerShell, you can leverage the SharePoint Online PowerShell from Microsoft, you can leverage other modules that you may use when you're writing Office 365 PowerShell, the Microsoft Teams PowerShell module, you can add to it. So you can go add all of these modules into Azure Automation, and now you can write this PowerShell script in Azure Automation. I have done several of them for different activities, especially around Office 365, that maybe there isn't native functionality built into Logic Apps or Flow for. So one of them is assigning like unique list item permissions, going into SharePoint, setting unique permissions on a list. I have done some around like a whole groups and teams provisioning process where it's not simply just going out and creating a group or a team in Office 365, but actually configuring settings, dictating the URL, setting a friendly name versus a visual name versus the email alias for that group or team. So all of those settings in a PowerShell script and really fine-tuning what those groups look like. So you write all of that as a script, and then in your Azure Automation account, you can create a runbook. And these runbooks, think of them as a single script where you can pass in parameters, just like a normal PowerShell function you might write where you want to pass in URLs, you want to pass in IDs, you want to pass in usernames. anything you might want to pass in, you set it as a parameter on this runbook in Azure Automation. And then in Flow or Logic Apps, you go search for an action in there to execute, and it is automation and run a runbook or start a runbook. If you go in and select that runbook, you have to go through, select the right subscription, resource group, all of that. You get to that runbook level, select the runbook. All these parameters that you set in that runbook will show up right within Logic Apps or Power Apps. So you can then pass in values from your Logic App or your Flow. If these are coming from a SharePoint list, if it's coming from a user lookup in Azure AD, you can pass any of these properties from your Flow or Azure right into this PowerShell runbook and run this PowerShell script to go assign licenses, create groups, create teams, set list item permissions in SharePoint. Anything you can do in PowerShell, you can call from this automation action in Logic Apps or Flow to really build a very rich automation. And again, I've done a lot of these around provisioning. I also tied this into one where I was doing some stuff with policies and procedures and approving those and copying over values between SharePoint lists. Just a lot of options there to really automate that whole experience while staying in the cloud and not spinning up a single server.
It's an interesting thing. So once you start to tie into a service like Azure Automation, which you do need to have that paid Azure subscription, right? So we're back to, you need to have the subscription,
yep.
But you don't necessarily have to pay for the service because the service itself comes with a pretty decent amount of free compute every month or kind of free execution. And I forget what it is.
It's 500 minutes. So 500 yep. minutes of that PowerShell actually running. So think of your PowerShell scripts that run for like 30 seconds or a minute and a half or 2 minutes. You can run a lot of those scripts in 500 minutes a month.
Yep. So one of the interesting things that I think happens there is you've got a bunch of different options, maybe when it comes to integrating with your SharePoint Online tenant or potentially even multiple tenants. So if you're a system integrator or maybe you're a CSP or a managed service provider that does work with a bunch of customers and a bunch of tenancies. Now that you have this external service, all of a sudden you can do things like load credentials and automatically reference those credentials for all those tenants. Or you can even start to do some other really nifty things. Like because you're sitting in Azure, and now you have native capabilities with PowerShell, maybe just to talk to the graph through something like a registered application in Azure Active Directory. What if you created an enterprise app and that enterprise app was the thing that had the entitlements to go ahead and interact with SPO or Exchange Online or Teams or whatever it happened to be along the way for whatever piece of functionality you wanted to light up? And then, you know, again, can't stress it enough, to have access to that for free, at least within that limitation of the number of minutes, things like that, you can start to kind of put together these just really rich chained scenarios where now we're not saying just use Azure Automation and maybe credential management and enterprise applications in Azure Active Directory. Maybe, like you said, you have that flow that is executed based on something in a SharePoint list, like your site provisioning list, right? Where it goes through its approvals, does, you know, whatever it needs to do, lazy approval or serialized, and goes out. And then it says, okay, now I'm going to call the runbook. And maybe the runbook is the thing that creates the site. Or maybe I don't even call the runbook in Azure Automation. Maybe I just call something like an Azure function and go ahead and let that kick off in its consumption model with its bits and pieces, because you can write PowerShell over there as well.
Yep.
And have that all run up and ready to go. So these aren't services that are necessarily gated to developers. They're really just gated to saying like, hey, do I have a paid Azure subscription? But you really don't have to pay anything to use it, right? You have to have a credit card there just in case you do go over. But as long as you're watching it, make sure you don't go over, there's some really powerful functionality that's available to you just for free.
Right. And that's what I've told clients. I'm like, okay, guys, we need to write this PowerShell. We need to go leverage this in some process, something that we're building within their environment. I'm like, let's go spin up an Azure subscription. It's going to ask you for a credit card. We need to put something in, but I promise it won't ever charge you anything, because there is absolutely no way you're ever going to hit 500 minutes of PowerShell or 500 minutes of executing PowerShell in a month. with this script. And it was really interesting as people were asking questions yesterday too, to talk through it. Like you said, one question was around, well, can I do this against multiple tenancies? And because you're just doing the PNP PowerShell, like you said, you can connect to any tenancy you want. This Azure subscription doesn't have to be in the same tenancy that you're connecting to when you're doing like the Connect PNP service, I think it is, or Connect PNP Online, whatever one of those, the Connect SPO service. That can be any tenant, any credentials. This is just that, think of this as that PowerShell session, and it's connecting to whatever you want it to. And then even things like that, site provisioning is, a lot of companies don't necessarily want to give their entire service desk access to SharePoint administration. They don't want them mucking around with SharePoint admin as a whole, but they do want their service desk to be able to respond to tickets that maybe come in through ServiceNow and it's, hey, I'm requesting a new SharePoint site, a new team, whatever. Now you provide them a SharePoint list where the service desk can go in, fill out the information after, of course, they look through this list of all the sites, groups, teams that have been provisioned and make sure this isn't a duplicate, make sure there wasn't some miscommunication, but they can kind of manage this list, look through it. Great, this is an okay request. I'm going to go fill out this information in this SharePoint list, and my site goes out and gets provisioned without ever having to actually have access to any or have any admin rights within your Office 365 environment, because they're doing everything from that SharePoint list that's then triggering a flow, Azure automation, where all of those admin credentials are created and set up ahead of time, and it's using all of those to actually go execute those actions and create those various entities within Office 365.
Yeah, which I love, because now we can kind of build a little bit on maybe some of that governance that we talked about with things like securing entities in Azure Active Directory last week. And this is how you start to build and really stitch these rich solutions together when all of a sudden you have access to all of these in the cloud solutions. If you start thinking about being maybe cloud first versus bang your head against the wall first, it really opens up some interesting pathways in front of you.
Exactly. Opsgility is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. Real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com. These are the things, too, this came up yesterday. The things that I love about Office 365 is, now, this is the stuff I actually get to do for clients, is figure out this type of stuff. It's not installing cumulative updates and running patches and fixing servers and managing SQL databases that got too big for SharePoint, or managing your Exchange farm and your front ends and all the Exchange stuff out there. As you get to build these types of solutions and really help enrich your environment and your users' experience as they use Office 365.
Yeah, you don't want to be playing the weird game of managing servers if you can get out of it.
Yes, absolutely. So that was it. And again, we had kind of mentioned Power Apps a little bit. That comes in because now, again, you're in a SharePoint list. If you want to customize that form, customize that list. So one example I did give there was I customized the form that people enter to create sites. And I don't allow them to set the URL, but there is a URL field in that list. So once the site gets created, it automatically gets assigned a number or an ID in whatever URL schema naming convention I want to use. It actually writes that URL back to the list so that users can see the URL as you're browsing through this list of all your sites. You have the URL for each site with all the metadata there, but it's not one of the fields that's available when you go in to request the site. So now you can make a nice app, leverage Power Apps on the front end to give your users kind of that nice, friendly experience, hide certain fields, put rules around certain fields when they're going in and requesting it. So it's really, like you said, tying all of these different services together to create some of these nice, rich fun solutions.
Cool. I think that's a pretty good whirlwind tour of what's going on out there.
Yeah, now I can go catch my breath. I think I forgot to breathe a little bit in there.
It's all good.
All right.
It was your turn.
Yes. I look at the wave patterns and I'm like, wow, I talked a lot today. All right.
There you go.
Well, go enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks. That was fun. A nice recap of that session.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Sounds good. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, Scott. Don't melt. And we will talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.